Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. In this week's episode, we break down the first SEC contest against Auburn. We also have Sam Butler from the Auburn Plainsmen on to tell us a little bit about that Auburn team that Texas A&M will face this weekend. And we also have a little bit of a stand-up from Texas A&M offensive coordinator Noel Mazzoni.
And he's here all week, guys, until Saturday, well, till Friday.
Sure.
And then they leave for Auburn on Friday.
Sure. And we'll have a special guest picker, the great Aaron Hartigan from Fox Sports Southwest. You'll see her on those Rangers broadcasts in the studio, also on college football coverage. So let's get right into it. That mysterious voice, that disembodied voice you heard a second ago, that is the guy across the counter from me, the great Zach Taylor.
The shadow in the corner wearing the dunce hat. Yeah, that's me the entire time. Well, yeah, we're going to hear a little bit from Sam Butler talking about Auburn in just a little bit, kind of give us the Auburn perspective of things. But just looking at this game, obviously it's a big one because you're kicking off SEC play. Texas A&M is going on the road for the first time this year. The Aggies in the past, at least under Kevin Sumlin, have been a very good road team. They are a better road team than they are a home team. They've had some big wins on the road, including against these Auburn Tigers 2 years ago when they pulled out that miraculous win. And so it's usually a good game whenever these two teams get together. There have been a couple of stinkers in the first year. A&M really ran away with it, Jordan Hare. And then last year, Auburn came into Kyle Field and got a big win. But I think this game will be much more better, much more competitive. And I'm expecting to see a pretty good ball game come Saturday.
Sure. I think for me, the real key to the game lies in the battle in the trenches. I mean, you have two teams that have very good defensive lines. You have A&M with probably the best defensive in tandem in the country. And you have Auburn with a kind of inexperienced line as far as tackles go. Two guys who saw some action last year. Kind of sounds actually a little bit like A&M's line. Guys that saw some action last year in some different positions, but this will be their first year starting at tackle. And that's going to be quite a handful to handle Miles Garrett and Deshaun Hall in this kind of game at the beginning of the year.
I think it's going to be a huge test for both offensive lines, just like what you said. How well will Texas A&M's young guys up front be able to adjust? Because this, without a doubt, is going to be the best defensive line that they've faced so far this year. UCLA, even going back to last season, while they might be improved from last year, their run-stopping defense was pretty porous. And so how well is A&M going to be able to run the ball? That's a big question. And vice versa, how well is Auburn going to be able to run the ball against Texas A&M? Because I think when you talk about the passing game, there are question marks for both teams. I think Sean White and Trevor Knight are both pretty good quarterbacks, but they're not going to be guys that are going to light you up. They're not going to be throwing the ball all over the place.
I was just really tempted when we talked to Sam here in the next segment. I just really want to ask, does Sean White like ski or, you know, skateboard?
Flying Tomato is now a quarterback at Auburn.
Right. Does he do anything, any kind of extreme sports at all? Yeah, I agree. I think it's interesting. I think a lot will fall on the run game, but I think from what I've seen so far in watching Auburn, one of their biggest struggles on defense is that occasional home run pass, letting a wide receiver get deep. And I think this could be a game where either Christian Kirk or Speedy Noel, particularly maybe Speedy Noel, can get in behind that defense and pull in a big gain or two. Now, it all depends on if Trevor Knight can put the ball right in his arms in stride, which is something that they didn't necessarily connect with a whole lot against Prairie View A&M, and this isn't going to be Prairie View A&M.
No, it's not, and you brought up the next thing that I was going to bring up, and that Trevor has been pretty inaccurate these first couple of games. And they use the excuse in saying, well, you know, the guy hasn't played meaningful football in about 19 months. You know, it's been a long time for him, da-da-da-da-da. At this point, I don't think that's an excuse. Whenever you're talking about a graduate transfer quarterback, he is what he is at this point. Either he's going to be a guy that can make the throws that he needs to make, or he's not going to be. And Trevor Knight has been very spotty. And will there be a little rust he has to shake off? Yeah, of course. But he really had a shot last week against an inferior defense to showcase some of that arm strength, to showcase some of that accuracy. And there were just flat-up times where he completely missed the pass. He missed the throw. And he's not going to have that luxury this week. He's not going to be able to make those mistakes and still be able to let it pay off, because Auburn, these SEC teams, are going to make him pay if he's not able to hook up with these receivers.
Sure, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think there was a lot of people who did leave that game saying, oh, well, new career high in total yardage. Oh, great game for Trevor Knight. And, I mean, he got what needed to be done, but if he plays the same way that he played this weekend against Auburn, against Alabama, against LSU, some of these good defenses in the league, I don't know if the outcome is going to be so great at the end, because again, you got to hit when you have Ricky Seals-Jones pretty much wide open on a much smaller defender cutting across the middle. You got to hit him in stride. You can't throw it behind him a couple times like you did when you have a guy who is open over the top of the defense. You got to get it close to him.
I tell you what, if you're going into this game, having seen Trevor Knight play last week, when the play breaks off around him, when maybe his receivers are in such tight coverage, he doesn't feel like forcing a ball in there. And he does have a little bit of that gunslinger mentality. But he's able to tuck it down and run it. I really like seeing that from him last week. He got, what, 70-something yards, 78 yards rushing last week. I think that's a part of his game that he can really utilize if they let him. And so, as we talked about, the inaccuracy, sometimes you're not going to be able to make the passes that you want to. I understand his job as a quarterback is to make those throws and to really cash in on the talent around him at the wide receiver position, which he's got a ton of it. But I do like his go-to, maybe his backup plan, being to run the ball. And I think if he can do that effectively, that's a pretty dangerous 1-2 punch.
Sure, sure. And if you look at the other side of the ball, and another one of the question marks A&M have coming into this season, that's the run defense. And this is going to be the first big test of if that run defense has shored up. I think you can look at the first two games and say, yeah, I mean, they're certainly better than last year. Are they good enough to push A&M over the top, to get them towards the top of the SEC West, or potentially maybe win it, to get over that 7 or 8 game threshold that I think most of us media types kind of put them at this season? We don't know yet, and I think after this Auburn game, we'll be able to really see where is it. Are they going to have another game where they let Auburn post over 300 yards rushing, or is it going to be a game where they have a strong misdirection power running attack? And that, you know, was it Mazzoni or was it Kevin Sumlin yesterday that said, you know, yeah, it looks spread, but don't be mistaken, this is a power run offense.
I think that was Sumlin yesterday,
right,
who mentioned that.
This is your prototypical SEC. It might look like a spread. It's your prototypical SEC offense. And it'll be that test. Will the linebacker step up? Kevin Sumlin said Richard Moore will be available this week. He ran off the field before the game during warm-ups of the game last week and wasn't available. Will they be able to run that base 4-3 better than they have so far this season, stop the run, and not depend on your corners and your safeties to make all the tackles?
I think the run defense for Texas A&M is heads above what it was last year. And it's one of those deals in which it's not as if the media is bringing this up and the players are refuting it. The players a lot of times have brought this up. This was a point of emphasis for us over the offseason. We were not good in the run defense. It was something that we got to be better at this year. And it's not the media, again, bringing that up. It's the players. And so I think that's very important. Another thing, too, it's kind of like in John Chavis we trust, okay? I have no worries, no question marks about the defense whatsoever. I think it's going to be ready. I think under the second year under John Chavis, I think this defense is not where it needs to be yet, but it's getting there, and it's getting there quickly. And I think a lot of that rests on John Chavis. A lot of it rests on the guys that he has under him. And I think the run defense, I think they're still going to suffer a little bit this week just because Auburn is so good at running the ball, and they've got so many guys in the backfield. We'll talk with Sam about this a little bit. I want to ask him about that running game that they've got behind that offensive line. But the run game is so good for Auburn. I think A&M is still going to have a little bit of trouble, but it's going to be one of those deals where it's bend but don't break, I think, for A&M. As long as they can keep them from rolling out some big plays, as long as they can somewhat contain them, I think that will be important on the defensive side of the ball for the Aggies.
Sure, and if you want to look at if there's any kind of past history of that, this could be a positive or a negative, but Auburn leads the SEC in field goals, the 5-for-5 this year. So they've had to kick the most field goals, I believe. No, I take that back. Florida has kicked 6, but 5 is tied for the second highest amount of field goals attempted this year. And so there, it seems, I mean, if you're kicking field goals, you're most likely, unless it's an end of game scenario, you're getting stopped in the red zone. And so there is the potential for that, and A&M has shown glimpses of that. Going real quick back to the run game, though, the other thing that's interesting is when you think back to think, okay, we have two games worth of film, of, you know, mental notes on this A&M defense, and to try to think back on how the linebackers and the defensive front have fared against the run, you go look at the beginning of the UCLA game, and at halftime, four players, the four leading tacklers, were all corners and safeties. And you kind of, you know, sigh a little bit and go, well, same old, maybe. But if you really think about it, both Prairie View and both UCLA, for some reason, did a lot of their running outside the tackles, around the end, short, you know, or dump passes, you know, laterals to the side, and made the corners try to make tackles, which... I think, man, step up and challenge A&M between the tackles. Because I don't know, when I think back, I can only think of about 3 or 4 times that Soso Jamabo actually ran between the tackles and tried to challenge the linebacking core. It was a lot outside the tackles, and Prairie View A&M was a lot outside the tackles.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how often, and we talked about the power run game of the SEC, that Auburn is able to implement that, but... You know, you look at the defensive line for Texas A&M, and you've got such great depth up front, and even in the big guys in the middle. We already talked about Deshaun Hall and Miles Garrett, but you've got guys in Daylon Mack and Kingsley Kiki and Zaycoven Henderson, guys who are quickly coming up and very talented to begin with now that they had that coaching. I think that defensive line, without a doubt, is the strongest part of the defense for Texas A&M. Whether or not they'll be able to slow down that run game, I think they will. But once you break past that first wave, the linebacking core, as well as the secondary, some of those guys can really hit in the secondary, but are they going to be able to play a big part in it? Justin Evans, Armani Watts, are they going to be able to come up and stop those running backs once they get past the big guys up front? That'll be a big question mark for me coming in.
Sure. Here's my last really random key of the game. If you look at some of these SEC conference stats, conference leaders, you have Auburn, who has the best punting average at 44.4 yards per punt, but only 5 punts. One of the fewest punts teams to punt this year, but has decent punt game. Against Texas A&M, which has the best punt return average of 93 yards per game on those punt returns. So that special teams could be pretty huge in this game. Shane Tribuca has done a really good job also for A&M on that punt game. But we'll have to see what Christian Kirk and Nick Harvey and Speedy Noel and some of those punt returners can do should the A&M defense stop them with that. Well, that's a quick little look at the game in Auburn this week. I'll be out there with Robert Cessna, so definitely hit up Twitter, Periscope. We'll be on the Periscope. We'll be on the Facebook Live. Maybe you'll get to see Cease run again. That was the highlight of our Periscopes last week.
That forever 40.
Do his 10 flat 40. But next, we have Sam Butler from the Auburn Plainsman coming on to break down a few of those little intricacies about Auburn that we may not have seen yet, so stay tuned for that.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown. And of course, it is game week. Texas A&M gearing up to take on Auburn. And so to get us ready, we're actually joined by somebody who knows the Auburn football program pretty well, Sam Butler of the Auburn Plainsman. And Sam, first off, you guys are a student paper, is that right?
That is correct, yep.
Okay, so you're currently a student at Auburn. What year are you?
I am a senior. This will be my last year here at Auburn.
Okay, awesome. So you've gotten pretty acclimated with the team. You've seen what they can do. So far this year, what have you taken away from the performances from Auburn? Obviously, a close loss in week one to Clemson, then the second-ranked Clemson Tigers, and then a big win over Arkansas State last week.
Yeah, the big thing that's really stood out has been the performance of the defense. Last year, it was kind of spotty, but they came in this year, and they held Clemson to 19 points. And then, obviously, Arkansas State isn't as great of a team, but still 14 points. And back-to-back weeks, the defense has been really, really impressive. On the other hand, the offense, Gus Malzahn's known for being an offensive guru, but the first week, no one really knew what was going on. He tried to outsmart Clemson. He tried to do a bunch of window dressing with a bunch of unnecessary pre-snap motions and rotating three quarterbacks in. No one knew what he was doing, and obviously it didn't work. But last week against Arkansas State, they just went with Sean White. They rolled with him the whole game, and they hung 51 points on Arkansas State. So I think the improvement from week one to week two was pretty impressive, and I think that they're starting to figure things out.
Is that one of those instances in which you're just trying to do too much? You talked about the three quarterbacks in that game one, maybe trying to force Jeremy Johnson into the game when maybe you didn't have to?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that, like I said, Gus was just trying to outsmart Clemson. He wasn't doing what Auburn does best, which is a power running game run quickly. Switching all the quarterbacks in and out, it threw everyone off. They didn't get into a rhythm. It didn't allow anybody to settle in. And like when Sean and Kerryon Johnson, the starting running back, would have a really good thing going with the handoffs, they get going quickly, then Jeremy Johnson would come in and he'd throw an interception, or John Franklin would come in and they'd try and do some kind of read option. Franklin wasn't doing the reads correctly. So I think just switching things up goes against what Auburn's really good at, and I think they're starting to figure that out.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think, a key game in the trenches. Both teams have really great defensive lines. I know Auburn's offensive line, especially at the tackle position, a little bit inexperienced. What have you seen from them the first two games that might prove to you that they might be able to be a little bit of a force against Myles Garrett and Deshaun Hall?
Right. Both tackles were not starting last year. Austin Golson, the left tackle, was the center last year, but he got bumped out to the outside this year. They had some trouble in the first game because Clemson's got some really, really talented defensive ends. They didn't do horribly in run blocking, but pass blocking, they had some issues, and the quarterbacks got hit some. Against Arkansas State, they were fine. But like you said, Garrett and Hall, those guys are one of the best pass-rushing pairs in the nation, and it's going to be a really, really tough test for Auburn and that offensive line to hold them off. And I think that's, honestly, in the trenches, that's going to be the key for this game.
And what kind of key? We saw Sean White running last week, picked up, 60-something yards, I think, on 10 carries. Is that something that Auburn fans can look for this weekend to see him run the ball more?
Yeah, I think he is. He's really underrated as a runner. And Kerryon Johnson actually called him a spicy player and said he's got that little mean streak to him. So Sean White, he's not afraid to pull it and run it if he has to. Obviously, he's not as fast as John Franklin is, who was a track star, but he's really, really underrated in the running game. He can definitely break it out and pull it on some of those reads if he has to.
Focusing on the running as far as the quarterbacks go, but what about that stable of running backs they've got back there? I mean, it seems like Auburn, year in and year out, is going to have somebody who can eclipse 1,000 yards, and this year they've got several guys that are very, very talented back there.
Yeah, they actually thought they were going to have more at the beginning of the season, but the leading rusher from last year, Peyton Barber, went to the NFL, and then Javon Robinson got dismissed from the program at the beginning of fall camp. So they're rolling with Kerryon Johnson. Like I mentioned earlier, he was a true sophomore. This is his first year starting, and we had some questions going into the season about how he'd hold up as the number one premier running back, but he kind of quieted all those concerns, especially last week against Arkansas State. Him and Cameron Petway, who moved over from H-back to the tailback position, both went over 100 yards, and yeah, I think either one of those guys could really be a prime candidate for breaking that 1,000-yard mark, which Auburn's had, I think, 7 seasons in a row. So I really wouldn't put it past them, and they both look like really good, strong guys.
Defense, like you said, has looked pretty pretty strong the past two games. Although it seems like to me, from what I've seen, that every now and then the secondary might be a little bit prone to give up the big play. Texas A&M has one of the better wide receiving cores in the SEC. Is that something that might be a a little bit of key of a concern or a focus of the defense this week is locking down some of those big plays?
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. Kevin Steele, the defensive coordinator, talked after the Clemson game about how one of their biggest goals was to not let the top get taken off the defense, to not allow any explosive plays. And for the most part, they did that. But against Arkansas State, the only time the Red Wolves really got anything going was when there were a couple busted coverages in the secondary. So that's going to be huge for Auburn, to limit those explosive plays, to keep the top on the defense. And if they can do that, I mean, still, like you said, A&M has one of the best receiving corps in the SEC, if not the nation. So it's going to be tough no matter what. But, yeah, keeping the top on and not letting those guys get deep and beat them is going to be huge.
Talking Texas A&M versus Auburn, the Aggies and the Tigers will square off this Saturday at 6 o'clock in Auburn, and visiting with the Auburn Plainsman, Sam Butler. And Sam, a lot has been talked about this defensive line for the Tigers. That's a real go-to, I think, with a lot of questions that the media have asked about for Texas A&M coming into this week. How will they be able to deal with the defensive rush and the running game? How well will it be able to adjust to a great defensive line for Auburn? What have you seen from them? Is it really everything that's built up to be? Are they that good?
Honestly, I think it is. This is one of the deepest defensive lines that Auburn's had in a very long time, and it is stocked with talent. Carl Lawson, who has been Auburn's best player on defense by far for the past couple of years, is finally healthy. He got injured last year in the first half of the opener against Louisville and didn't come back near the end of the season. But him on the outside and opposite him is a true freshman, Marlon Davidson, who's a five-star this year. And then in the middle, you've got Montravius Adams. He was also a five-star. Him and Adams and Lawson could have gone to the NFL this year, but decided to stay and cap off their senior seasons here at Auburn. And then behind them, you've got more five-stars. You've got Derrick Brown. He's a freshman. You've got Byron Cowell. He was the number one recruit in the nation last year, but he hasn't broken the starting lineup. So when those guys rotate in, there's not really much of a drop-off. When you've got more five-stars hiding behind them, you don't really give the offensive line of the other team a break. And I think that's been really key. They're able to switch those guys in and mix up coverages and schemes right there and throws a lot of things off, and it's really hard to stop.
Yeah, I think from the outsider's view, when trying to assess how good Auburn is right now, I think the question really falls back on, well, how good was Clemson? From what you were able to see from that game, how good was Clemson? Are they the same team that they were last year?
It's really tough to say. Jordan-Hare Stadium at night is a really tough environment to play in, and for the most part, they didn't really seem to have too many issues with that, but something looked off, and like, they kind of did last week against Troy. Like, the Clemson team that is there right now is pretty much the same team, at least on offense, that was there last year that went to the championship. But they just had trouble finding spots against the Auburn defense. Auburn was really good at bending but not breaking. They never let them score too many times. Really, the biggest thing that killed them was Watson throwing back shoulder fades to Mike Williams, who missed all of last season and came back. But for the most part, Clemson, like, I don't think they intimidated Auburn too much. I think they were prepared to play them. And honestly, it's kind of tough to get a gauge on where Clemson was. We could get to the end of the season and look back and say, well, Clemson was just having trouble getting started out of the gate. Or we could come back and say Clemson wasn't anywhere near what we thought they'd be. So I don't know. It's really tough to peg them right now.
Sam, from your perspective, what is Auburn going to have to do well to get the win over the Aggies on Saturday?
I think it goes back to that offensive line. I think they're going to have to be able to slow down Garrett and Hall. I think they're going to have to give Sean White time, because he's not going to win you any games. He's going to not lose you any games. And if you keep him from making mistakes and you let him make his right reads and find those receivers and give him and the running back some time to get open, I think that that might be the key. Auburn's receiving core is pretty young. They played as a whole, not just the receivers, but on the team, I think they played 16 or 18 freshmen, true and redshirt freshmen last week. So they're, as a whole, they're pretty young. So getting those guys acclimated quickly, especially in their season opener, a lot of these guys haven't played an SEC game before, I think that's going to be huge.
Sam Butler of the Auburn Plainsman giving us a little insight into the Auburn Tigers. Of course, they're going to be hosting Texas A&M this Saturday. Kickoff set for 6 o'clock in Auburn at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Sam, thanks so much for your time, man. Really do appreciate it. Good luck through your senior year, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
Hey, everybody, I'm Willie James, and welcome to the Aggie Laugh Factory. It's the Aggie Football Press Conference, and making his big debut tonight is the one, the only, and the very funny, Noel Mazzoni.
Noel, considering that Auburn, the strength of Auburn's defense, we hear is supposed to be their defensive line or front seven, is this a...
No wonder Turner didn't show up to work today.
Noel, back to Trevor's interception. On what was the conversation when he came off the field? I guess what was your message to him when he came off the field?
The other guy was wide open, right? You know there always is. Huh? Why'd you throw the other guy's wide open?
After the game, Coach Sumlin described Trevor. He said he had some nerves, even for an older guy. Is that something? Coach also talked about him throwing it in the grass and throwing it up. Is that something you address with him? Because Trevor's just naturally an amped up guy anyway, you know, in terms of his nerves at the beginning of a game and then settling in.
So number one, there is no age scale on nerves, okay? Because I'm 60 and I'm nervous as shit all the time. All right.
Coach, so having coached at Auburn a few years, how do you rate that game day environment?
Their game day, it's a good game day environment.
On the right side, Ben.
Well, Coach.
Not as good as here.
Coach, right here.
I don't want to piss them off over there, right? I don't want to be Rosen and have, you know, yelling, chanting my name about 50,000. All right? It's SEC football. I mean, what an awesome. I told the kids the other day how lucky they are. Now, you know, I've coached in places where there's, you know, 15,000 in the stands, and how lucky they are to have the chance to play in these kind of venues week in and week out. And that's just another great venue in the SEC. Now, that was a good answer. Yes.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. And Zach, you ever been to the Aggie Laugh Factory before? Where's that?
No, I don't think I have. I think it used to be on the south side of town a while back. I think they moved locations though.
Yeah. Willie James, too. Is he related to you? Kind of think you kind of sound similar.
I've heard that name. We might be distant cousins, something like that. But I've never actually gotten to meet him. I hear he's a great guy though, very handsome.
Yeah. Well, Aggie Laugh. I hear they have good drink specials at the Aggie Laugh Factory. If you find it, just let us know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but. For sure. No, we got to hear from Noel Mazzoni this week, and as usual, it is just a chuckle fest in there. Now, you know, keeping professional courtesy, there was no actual laughter. Well, there was a little bit of laughter, but not too much laughter in the press conference room.
There were some of those.
As there is every week, but we definitely want to, you know, give you the Aggie fan a little bit of a taste of just the quality of humor and just kind of the kind of laid back nature that Noel Mazzoni brings to these press conferences. Is actually, I mean, 100%, no sarcasm, no jokes here. It is really refreshing to have a coach in some of these press conferences that will crack some jokes with you, that will give you a great quote or two throughout, because I think too many players and coaches and whatnot are taught just to be so robotic. You got the Jason Garrett bot syndrome going on.
Giving 110%.
All three phases of the game. 24/7. But it's great. It's great to have him in there. It's great to have him doing what he does with us in those press conferences. And I don't know if we will have a better quote this year than the one he gave about being 60-year-old and as nervous as he always is.
Yeah. When he comes in there, and I know you weren't here last year, obviously Jake Spavital, and Spav was a really nice guy, don't get me wrong, and he'd answer all your questions and stuff, but he wasn't going to be cutting up with the media. He wasn't going to be throwing a lot of funny jokes out there. And Sumlin can say every now and then Sumlin kind of jokes around with the media, but generally it's just to make us look stupid. But ever since John Chavis came, you know, Chavis is a very, from everything that we get,
howdy!
Yeah, howdy. He's a very genuine kind of guy. And Noel Mazzoni, very much the same. It's like, He's not going to go up and give you a bunch of coach speech and try and hide something, it seems like, generally. He'll usually give you the honest answer that he has, and that's pretty refreshing, as you were talking about, in a day and age when coaches give a lot of coach speech and it's just the boring old same old thing.
Sure, sure. So that was our first peek, you know, our first little fly in the wall listen into the Aggie Laugh Factory. It's kind of like a pop-up comedy shop. You never know where it's going to be in Aggieland or when it's going to happen. It's a little bit of a speakeasy. But if we get any more great audio from another kind of Tuesday stand-up routine from one of the A&M coaches or players, we might just bring back the Aggie Laugh Factory, get another guest appearance by MC Willie James. So now we go back to the important stuff, and the important stuff is college football picks. And man, do we have a great guest picker this week. Aaron Hartigan of Fox Sports Southwest joins us to break down the best college football games from this weekend. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. We have Zach Taylor here.
Are you okay over there?
I have really, really terrible allergies today.
Pain, man.
I have been like covering my mouth and trying to get as far away from the microphone. We have no like dump buttons in here, so I've been struggling a little bit. But it makes for a better "and we're back" with just all the nasal and everything. So that being said, we have probably, you know, one of the most important segments of the podcast, and that is pick 'em. We're gonna pick some games. Maybe don't endorse gambling, but if you want to make some
money. Do we have a running tally? Have we actually gone back and figured out what our records are?
I'll put one together this week. Now, okay. I wanted to let you know that we have the prognosticators panel in the Eagle, where Robert Cessna and you know, Chip Howard from the Zone and Brent Zorneman, Billy Lucci, all the Eagle people.
All the
pick games.
Names.
And yours truly is on top after 2 weeks.
Wow,
so,
aren't you fancy?
You know, maybe you should make sure you should listen to the podcast out there, cyberspace, and get some hot takes from me. But more importantly than all of that is the person that we have on the phone line right now, and that is the great, the talented. You probably have seen her on TV plenty of time, and she has the coolest job in the world because she works with Pudge Rodriguez every day, one of my childhood idols. That is Aaron Hartigan of Fox Sports Southwest. You'll see her on those Ranger games. You'll see her doing the college football coverage. Aaron, EH, what's up?
Putting up with Pudge is more like it. I'll pay you later, and I'm calling you Rick Renner from here on out because I think Rick would totally approve if you're welcome back there. Was that not Rick Renner at its finest?
Oh, you know what? That was a pretty good Rick Renner. Now I think about it.
Rick Renner would give that a 10.
You know,
I thought you were super excited to like hear from me, but no, I thought that was great. You're channeling your inner Rick, and you sound ready to go, man.
But my hair is not nearly as immaculate. Right,
you gotta
now.
Use a lot no of gel if you want to get it. Rick,
no, he has. Style, he has. Do say that again.
I said no one's is. Trust me, Rick yeah. runs the hair game.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I'm just rocking the hat today because I can't even compare to that. But we have some games. We have some great games. This is a great slate this week, and we'll start with Texas at Cal, the dreaded varsity that these Aggies down here love to hate so much. EH, what do you got in that game?
You know, I love the overhype right now, and I think we're overhyping the wrong person. Yes, Shane Buechel's great. Yes, they found the niche for Tyrone Swoops. But Sterling Gilbert has been the brain behind it all. And I think I'm interested to see what Texas does on the road for the first time this season. That said, I've not been impressed with Cal, former Texas Tech quarterback Davis Webb there. I like Texas and Sterling Gilbert leading that offense there. I'm going to go with the Lawrence.
You know, as someone who's covered Shane Buechel for all of his life, he is a good kid. He's a goofy kid. He is a great quarterbacking talent. I think the sky's the limit for him. And
he's
beyond
his years, is he not? I mean, I think you and I have covered his high school games together at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But the kid has always been so mature and has just carried himself beyond his years. So, I mean, I think we're, like, not surprised, right?
Of course, of course, of course. So, I'm going to go with Texas. I think they have them, pretty good mojo so far this year. Not that impressed with Cal, like you said. So I'm gonna go with Texas. Zach, what do you got?
My big question is this: is how many points are going to be scored in this game? Because both of these offenses have been running hot the first 2 weeks, and neither one of these defenses has been able to do much.
Sure.
Other than Texas just played UTEP, but does that really count? Does it count? Oh gosh. You know, I got to take the Longhorns as much as it pains me. I think it's going to be closer than what a lot of people think. It's an 8-point line right now that'll probably drop as we continue to go on. I really think going out of the West Coast is going to have a bit of an impact as well. I think that that's going to suck a little bit of life out of the Horns playing a 9:30 game, what would be 9:30 Central out on West Coast time. But I still think UT ends up winning in this one.
Yeah, definitely. All right, next we have UCLA at BYU. BYU coming off a just traumatic Holy War loss by 1 point to Utah. UCLA started off with that overtime loss here in Aggieland against A&M. Let's start with Zach this time. Zach, who you got?
Oh, you're going to throw it to me right off the bat, man. I haven't even seen the line on
that's
game.
A Gus Malzahn misdirection right there.
Yeah, no joke.
UCLA. Hey, beauty over brains, baby.
There you go. It's a 3-point edge, at least in the line, for UCLA. I tell you what, though. BYU in Provo, I'm taking the Cougs, baby. I mean, you gotta really think about this. All of these guys are like 28 years old. You know, you've got some good quarterbacks, and Taysom Hill, he's gonna have a pretty good game as long as he stays healthy, of course. But I think I'm going to take BYU in this.
You know, I think I kind of agreed with you. And, you know, we can go back to the Josh Rosen comment of does 100,000 sound like 50,000? There's probably, and I don't know if it has and I just forgot the name of their stadium, but BYU Stadium is probably going to be around 50,000, 50,000 to 60,000.
LaVell Edwards Stadium.
I've been there before. It's a great stadium. They are loud in there. That is a loud, maybe not rowdy.
Rowdy Mormons.
That's a loud BYU crowd.
Yeah, those Mormons. Don't underestimate those Mormons.
the old Mountain West Conference foes, but the BYU crowd is going to be pretty loud. I'm going to get that team pumped. Give me BYU. What do you say, EH?
They're fighting to get in the Big 12, too. I mean, they're trying to make a case this season as to why they should be a member of the Big 12 Conference. So, and they're going to be I'm the last one that wants to face them following their loss last week. Also, UCLA has just not impressed me on the road, regardless of the overtime loss to A&M. Josh Rosen continues to dig himself a hole. I like the Cougs in this.
Definitely, definitely. Okay, speaking of Cougs, let's go to some different Cougs. Those great Houston Cougs at Cincinnati. This might be one of the bigger, one of the more challenging conference tests that Houston has this year. I'll go ahead and start and say, pretty simply, Houston. Houston is one of the top 10 teams out there. I think they're going to continue to roll, and I think they're going to make a case and make it really difficult on that college football playoff to try to you can't be a, you're not a BCS buster, you're a playoff buster. That doesn't sound nearly as good. What do you say, EH?
You know, I think Houston runs the game. Louisville's going to be their biggest test this year.
Well,
but
true.
I would not be surprised to see Tom Herman and the guys run the table. And if anyone wants them to do it more, it's Oklahoma. I don't know if there are any bigger Houston fans out there than Sooners right now. They need Houston to run the table to at least give them a shot and at least put them in the conversation late. That is, of course, if Oklahoma can remain unbeaten from here. But I love Tom Herman and the Cougs in this one. Again, it's back-to-back Cougs for me here.
Houston's got Greg Ward Jr. back. They're firing on all cylinders. It doesn't matter that they're playing on Thursday night. It doesn't matter that they're playing on the road at Cincinnati. Cougs win big in this one.
Definitely. All right. This one hits a little bit close to your heart, Yage. I know I'll let you go first. That is the Ducks at Go Big Red.
You know, I don't know if anyone understands how hard it is to be a born and raised Husker fan. It's very difficult for me. I think my family would disown me if I didn't go with Nebraska in this. I like their chances in Lincoln. Also, is it just me, or does it feel like Tommy Armstrong's been there for like 10 years?
Yeah, probably more like 15.
He is like the next, he's the new Taylor Martinez. It's like we can't get rid of him. That said, I hope he comes through big. Again, I like their chances at home. You want to talk about rowdy stadiums and great fan bases. Lincoln is the place to be Saturday. I got to go GBR in this one.
Definitely. You know, we have a close friend here in College Station, and Colin Deaver, who is an Oregon grad. This is a tough. I'm split between friendships here.
Hey, Nebraska always manages to find a way to you know what's best.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm leaning on a little bit. I think
again,
I got to go Ducks in this one.
It's been a rough growing up for me. It's difficult to be a Nebraska fan in this world. So I don't blame you for going against them, TV.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go. I think I'm gonna go Ducks this week. What do you say, Zach?
Quack. Quack. Quack.
Duh,
quack.
Hey,
quack,
that's
quack,
like how
quack.
Yeah, that's five characters. That's perfect.
There you go.
I was about to say just put that in dense the parentheses right next to it. Just repeat
maybe
that.
Maybe a hashtag,
times.
Maybe not. Sometimes you don't even need a hashtag.
We have the top three games here left pretty much of this weekend. Florida State at Louisville. You talked a little bit about that Louisville team. They've been just stellar this year. EH, what do you say?
Love Lamar Jackson, Louisville quarterback. I don't know. Too many question marks with Florida State at this point, and I think I got to go with my favorite quarterback in this matchup. So I'm going to go Louisville, man.
Yeah, you know, I think I agree. I think I'm going to go Louisville too. Just I mean, the highlight reels that they produced this year have been pretty outstanding to watch. I think they're the team that has a little bit kind of less to lose in this game. I think you know, Florida State with the tradition and with what they've been picked to do in the ACC. I like the team that kind of comes in a little bit more, a little bit looser, and that I think it'll be Louisville. I got Louisville.
I think Bobby Petrino is going to take a joyride on his motorcycle. Watch out. Watch out.
With the blonde or without?
Yeah.
We won't go there. No, but lastly, how cool would it be if we had an unbeaten Louisville and unbeaten Houston late in the season meetup? That would be fun. So I'm pulling for that sort of matchup. We need Louisville.
The AA, the American Athletic Conference game day site that week?
Yes.
Hey,
they'll be throwing him a bone that week. There you go.
Yeah, that would be a little different, wouldn't it? But that's going to be a fantastic matchup no matter what. You know, I've got to go Noles, man. I think that Florida State's riding high. They got Francois. They beat Ole Miss. I had Ole Miss to win that game. They shocked me. And yeah. I think the Noles are going to win it.
Yeah, definitely. All right, getting into the SEC. Alabama at Ole Miss. Hottie toddy or roll tide? Zach, we'll start with you since I know you're not looking at the screen anymore.
It's weird that Hugh Freeze has Nick Saban's number. It's the weirdest thing ever, and they're going to be playing in Oxford this year. I think Ole Miss pulls off an upset.
Whoa, sound the alarm.
I think Ole Miss
sound the alarm.
Is going to pull off the upset much like they did a couple years ago with Bo Wallace, much like they did. Did they win last year too, if I'm not mistaken? It was a close game no matter what. So Hugh Freeze, for some weird reason, is the kryptonite to the Superman that is Nick Saban. I think Ole Miss wins it.
All right, EH, talk some sense into him.
Ooh, did you see Nick Saban when they were, like, rolling Joe Schmo's Tigers? Well, I don't even know who they were playing last week, but they were up, like, 50 at one point, and he's gone. I mean, Nick Saban is hungry this season. I mean, when they're up 50, it's still not good enough for him. As much as I would love to see a third straight upset by Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss, I just can't see Saban letting that happen again. I gotta go Roll Tide in this one, man. They have just been unbelievable. I think there's no unanimous number one in the country than Alabama, right? I mean, am I wrong?
Right.
No other team has been more proven than Alabama to this point.
I mean, I have to agree with you. You have Nick Saban over there yelling at his offensive coordinator Daniel Tosh, and I mean, sorry,
who
Lane Kiffin.
I can't even think of who they were playing, but it was like he just doesn't let off the gas.
Right. And
Nick
so,
Saban's not a very happy person.
No,
I think we can come to that conclusion.
Yeah. So, you know what? I have Alabama coming out of the West this year. I think I have Alabama going into the college football playoff. This is not going to be a stumbling block for them. You have Alabama in that. And finally, the big game of the week, the one that we've been talking about for so many hours now, or about an hour now, actually. That is Texas A&M at Auburn. First SEC game for Texas A&M, probably the best rushing offense A&M will see so far this year, and probably the best defense they've seen this year. Just the best overall test. Guest picker, EH, what do you got?
You know, I think the last time Trevor Knight beat an Alabama team or a team from the state of Alabama was in the Big Sugar Bowl win. So I say he goes back-to-back on teams from Alabama in his career. Trevor Knight's experience leads A&M to victory. Also, do I have to say that because I'm on an A&M podcast?
No, not at all.
I love the Aggies in this one. And again, Trevor Knight and his experience, I think the Aggies lucked out in this whole like OU A&M swaparoo that they did in the offseason. I love A&M in this one.
Zach.
This is really tough. And of course, you know, me being an Aggie, you would think that I'd have to pick Texas A&M on this.
I didn't go with TCU last week, and it
paid
off.
And I was the only one that went with TCU. And then you look at the other part. Texas A&M has really struggled in the rushing game, rush defense. Auburn's very, very talented at that. However, I think the Aggies are much improved in that category. I think that Trevor Knight will be able to rely on his running game a little bit more this week. I think the Aggies win it, but it ain't going to be easy.
Here's my take. I think A&M wins. I think it's going to be a nail-biter. One score, maybe even a field goal at the end. I think A&M starts off very sluggish, very slow. I think they get behind, maybe by two scores, and then make a second-half comeback. And it's going to be down in the wire, a last possession, possibly an overtime kind of deal. This is kind of a coin flip game for me, but I think A&M has a little bit more of the talent. I think they'll make a comeback in the second half. And put that one away.
Just FYI, you know the Arkansas game's 2 weeks away, right? This is Auburn that they're playing, not Arkansas.
Yeah.
You're talking about getting
right
early and then coming back and just winning it in a nail biter.
Right, well, that Arkansas, after watching that TCU game, that Arkansas game is a whole paints a whole other picture.
Yeah, I was going to say, we don't like to bring up Arkansas here in DFW after what happened this weekend. Wow,
was that
unbelievable. Hey, I want to know where Joe Tessitore is next weekend, because he seems to get all the good games. He was at Texas Notre Dame. He called the TCU Arkansas. Everyone wants to know where Joe Tess is this next weekend. He's got the good ones.
Zach is feverishly typing over here.
I don't know where to look to see where he's going to be.
Yeah, we'll have to put that in the comments.
I don't know what he does right, man, but maybe it's just because he's, like, so dramatic as it is. Like, he lives his life dramatically that the drama follows him. I don't know, but I just think that's ironic. And, no, honestly, I love A&M in this one, guys, and it's just so crazy to be catching up with TV, because I literally feel like the last time I saw you was in, like, a trailer that served as a high school press box with, like, a cooler full of lunch meat and juice boxes.
I was going to say, was it that? Or the same description was at Prime Prep?
I think that was the last time I'd seen you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, EH, thank you so much for jumping on. We're going to have you back on, to just break down some college football. So stay tuned for that phone call. And again, thank you, everybody, for tuning into the My Aggie Nation podcast. Next week, we travel up to the DFW for that game against Arkansas. But first, it's Auburn. We'll see how that goes. Again, thanks to EH. Thanks to Sam Butler of the Auburn Plainsmen for coming on and joining us. Big shout out, as always, to my buddy Andrew Sullivan for letting us use some of his music in this podcast. It's AndrewSullivanMusic.com. For Zach Taylor, I'm Travis Brown. We'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way to must have the seams. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. And if we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah. Don't wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't wanna make sure